Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with the subject of reality. We are recording today from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And thank you all so much for joining us. Most morning prayer.
Some excerpts from page 106 of Collectanea. God is infinite. Good is infinite. If we limit good and concede power to evil, how can we expect to escape that which we believe has power to hold us in bondage? The first commandment forbids us to believe in a power apart from God. There is no error of any name or nature in my consciousness that can resist, hide, or escape the truth. The light of truth and life and love shines straight through my belief of evil and banishes it, chasing it into its native nothingness. My desire is to know and obey God's law, to be filled with all the fullness of spirit, knowing only the consciousness of God good. My health, strength, life, intelligence, action, etc., are subject to the governing and controlling power of the divine mind and to nothing else, for there is no other power. There is no insufficiency of any kind in truth, in infinite love. Good is ever present and is the only reality of existence. This renders evil obsolete. Rebecca Eddy.
Thank you very much. All right, Karen, the watching point.
Watch number 124. Watch lest your sense of good be comparative instead of uniform, human rather than divine. Human good seems good only by contrast, thus supporting a sense of evil through the belief in opposites. When one says, quote, I feel fine, end quote, you can hear the unvoiced reason, because I am not sick. The belief in comparative good, where a statement of health includes a belief in the reality of sickness, is only a step toward the understanding of that good that is all. The error of human or material good, so-called, is that it sustains a sense of the reality of evil. For this reason, it is necessary to watch one's sense of good in order to remove as fast as possible the tinge of human sense that carries with it the belief in the existence of an opposite possibility. The only sense of good that is uniform, all-encompassing, and that knows no opposite, is the divine. When God saw everything that he had made, and behold, it was very good, it was very good, not because it was not evil, but because it came forth from the source of all good. The acceptance of good by comparison was what brought the mist that rose up from the earth. From this mist resulted the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. The master rebuked a man for calling him good, Mark 10. Perhaps he detected that it was a goodness that was in comparison or contrast with men who are not good. Such a conception would be immortal and erroneous, being based on the belief in the possible badness of mortal man. As long as one's sense of existence is based on comparison and opposites, he is clinging to the pendulum of mortal belief, which swings between human good and evil, harmony and discord, love and hate, life and death. Such a belief makes a reversal of harmony possible at any time. The scientific consciousness of the reality and ever-presence of all good carries no contrast, since it is based on the recognition that God is all, and that everything he created is godlike and hence perfect.
Thank you. Right. Comments on that. That's a good one.
I realize when I go out a lot, a lot of times I hear when I ask, how are you doing, or how's your day going? Some of the times I hear good so far, or good, knock on wood, stuff like that. And I realize that it's just so prevalent in society that they're just waiting for the shoe to drop almost. And I realize when I hear that, I'm going to be more, I don't necessarily say anything when I hear it. I just wish that I hadn't heard it, because I wish they knew that they don't have to wait for something to happen. But I can do it in my own thought and just know when I hear that, no, they're not going to see anything but good. So anyway, it's definitely a prevalent thought out there, and but I love it when somebody says, I'm having a great day. And I said, great. Well, you just keep on doing that.
Well, you know, Mrs. Evans, she took objection to that question for the reason I think of this watching point. And she would love to say, when people would ask how she was, she would say, I am just terrible. I'm having an awful time. Just to see the expressions on there. And, you know, it's something to think about. You're kind of inviting something when you're asked. It is the duality. And it's also, what is it? It's a bit of a dead ceremony, right? You're just saying it like you say, hello, how are you? So think about that one. Maybe you shouldn't ask that question. Maybe just say, good day. Isn't it a beautiful hour? Something like that. And not invite
how are you doing?
An answer.
Something okay. That I've done, instead of saying how are you, I say, oh, it's so good to see you.
Yeah, and, that's a good one. That's a good one. Yes, but this is an important point, because this is what are we taught here, that there's the law, that the one law, that God is all, and we do tinker back and forth with good and evil and health and sickness and all of that. And as scientists, we know everything is perfect now, because God is all in all.
What is good, God is perfect. So perfection, like I just read, it just is good, is ever present. And it is the only reality of existence, but that's not what the popular belief is, so.
Absolutely, yes,
I was recently working with, I believe it's the 23rd Psalm, where it says, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. And I was thinking, that's what that valley of the shadow of death is. That's that back and forth, good and evil, duality. That's the valley of the shadow of death right there. So we just have to stay out of that valley.
Yes.
This watching point talked about making comparisons, and it's actually quite an evil thing to do, especially when people get compared with other people. The presumption being that person A is better than person B, or rather person B is inferior to A. And this is all the malicious mind, you know, because somebody's going to feel good about being better than someone else, or someone's going to be ashamed of being inferior. This whole idea of making comparisons, no good thing comes from it. And if you have to compare with anything, maybe we should compare ourselves with that perfect model that we call God, and strive to emulate it even more, instead of being on the personal level, making comparisons. No good.
Yeah, there definitely should be no who shall be greatest amongst Christ followers, that's for sure.
Yeah. It would seem to be that's the breakup of many, many things, including churches. Very, very, and we're taught, we talked about it last week, thou shalt not covet. It was in the lesson. But it's all about, it's a command, not a suggestion. And we don't compare, and coveting is comparing. Someone has something more or less than I do. It's very easy to do, but this is why we have to be ever on guard to it.
Yeah, once again, we come back to that Heartsease, the story of the Heartsease.
Yeah, you want to talk about that?
We should just be who God made us to be and not to be concerned about being the oak tree or anything else. So.
Yeah, we each have our individual contributions. And if you're so thinking about someone else is doing, you're not doing what you should be doing, what God made you to do. And that's often why people aren't happy. So be what God made you. Be that little spot of sunshine wherever God puts you. And be content and happy with it. Talked about last week. In the recent addresses, this one, number two, which I've been was working with a little bit this week, he goes into an area where anytime you give credence to any kind of an error, even if you say it was animal magnetism, well, you're making a reality out of it. He says always to say it's nothing. It was nothing. And that goes along with the watching point. If God is all, then there is no animal magnetism to make you sick or sinful or whatever else. And I thought this was very helpful. He's talking about peace. He says many are charged with emotional conflicts within, relational conflicts without, in the family, in business, in the neighborhood. Prove regularly that man is full of peace. I would encourage you to take time each day to consider the proposition, this proposition. Take each synonym and realize that each of these qualities is working in universal consciousness, producing world peace. Will hatred produce world peace? No, it is only divine universal love that will bring us peace. Truth and honesty among individuals and nations produce world peace. Divine principle is forever at work. God has never surrendered his power of government. He is at work governing all. He is the one and only motivating force. War is very stupid. No one ever wins. It is intelligence, divine mind that eliminates wars and brings the reign of peace. And he asked the question to someone, when does God make wars to cease? And now and forever is the only answer. Let us rejoice in that fact regularly. What is it that interferes? I know nothing. That is it. Stick to your proposition. Since God is making the world peaceful, there is nothing that can reverse his plan or even seem to reverse his plan. The Bible says, he maketh wars to cease. Since this is so, what can stay his hand or say unto him, what doest thou? His will is supreme, and therefore the only will there is. And it is his will that there be peace on earth and goodwill toward men. Now this is using that proposition, true proposition, that God is all. And we can work like this to bring peace in our nations and world. It's what God does, and his will is the only will. There is no other will. There is no other mind to cause conflict, whether it is in a home situation or in a world situation. And this is knowing the absolute truth, which is back to the watching point. So, and we were taught here, and I think it's a very good thing, to work with the seven synonyms often, if not daily. Apply them to yourself, and then reach out. Apply them to your neighborhood, church, nation, world. Each one, think about it, as he did, each of those synonyms, how it applies to world peace. It's very, very powerful, Mrs. Eddy's definition of God. And we have a duty and a responsibility to be doing this work and to knowing no matter what, only good is going on. And there's great chemicalization going on. The air is being exposed to be destroyed. And God alone, he governs, and the tares will destroy themselves. And God will bring the wheat to fruition. And that is God. That is what God does. That's not what we can possibly do. This is God. But we can know it in our hearts, keep it in our hearts, and that helps manifest it so that we see it in our own lives and bring it to pass. Mrs. Eddy has said, right thought must manifest itself. It must. So keep your thinking in line with the truth that God is all, and we can bring wonderful things to pass, because in truth, they already are here, aren't they? They're right here, right now.
You already did it. So,
I thought the article... That article you recommended last week, The Practice of Christian Science, I think really helps to set up thought in this way. Because Bicknell Young starts out with really getting, probably one of the clearest ways I've ever heard it put, just getting your thought to understand that, you know, there, even like with practitioner and patient, they're just one individual. There's just one God, and it's not, you know, a lot of people, but God infinitely and individually expressed as people. And I found that just the way that he walks us through this really helped me to feel like my prayers for the world were correct and more powerful. It just, you know, it helps you feel that power of it when you start out really feeling and understanding that oneness, and not like I have to go out there and try to heal all these, you know, warring minds and, you know, all this division. It starts you out with like, no, God is one, and he's not divided against himself.
Thank you. Yeah. Otherwise, it's very hopeless. Created a problem in your own thinking. So, yeah. Thank you. And as we walk, we must be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. And we must be aware of what is trying to operate. We can't be ignorant to it. So I wanted to have Jeremy speak for a few minutes about AI.
Okay. Well, certainly AI has become a big thing, even outside of the tech industry. And the way that they sort of make AI and train it is they end up training it on all of the, like everything people have written. And so you already know that it's off to a bad start just because of that. And, you know, there have been a lot of people that have ended up committing suicide or doing stupid things because they've relied upon AI to be their, I don't know, sort of their therapist and their priest and whatever else. And it's leading to bad ends. Because they end up calling it, AI on its own will do this thing, and they call it hallucination. It will make up results that to the AI, it sounds right, but it's completely fake. And then when people take those hallucinations, they call it, you know, it's just psychosis, AI-induced psychosis. So all of these things are just not a good recipe for relying upon or anything. And, you know, I think of in the first edition of Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy capitalized intelligence when she meant it to be God. And that's the right intelligence. That's the real intelligence. And we all have access to that intelligence. We don't need to sign up for a service. We already have spiritual sense. So, you know, don't rely on anything else. God is already giving you all you need.
Thank you. Yeah, Florence calls it, instead of AI, it's divine intelligence, DI. DI.
Yeah,
well, yeah,
the only really intelligence.
Go ahead,
Florence. No, no, I just said that to me, that's the only intelligence, really. But I wonder sometimes what whether the AI, current AI that people are talking about, is not really here to help mankind. Just like when the computers first started, oh no, I'm not going to even touch it. This is this. It's man using it wrongly, I feel. I mean, I don't know yet what this AI is going to do, but it's supposed to be helping people, helping businesses and so on. So I don't know if it's not really what God is giving mankind to make life better or not. I don't know.
Yeah, in many ways, it's, yes. And what did you hear, Jeremy, about somebody using it to find out about God and Christian Science or something?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I actually had someone speak to me about there is some AI that is supposedly, after it was done being trained on all of the world's whatever, then they further trained it on Mrs. Eddy's writings and then said that if you talk to this AI and chat with it, it is like talking to Mrs. Eddy. And yeah, that conversation did not end up the way this lady was hoping, I think. But, you know, what an awful thing that would be. Why cannot the individual find Mrs. Eddy in her works? Like she expected us to. We can. We absolutely can. So to have a computer involved is completely ridiculous.
Yeah, that is downright creepy. Everyone here listening absolutely know better. But Florence, did you want to say something?
No, I'm just saying I don't think man is using what we are given to use to help and bless mankind and glorify God the way we should. That's my feeling about it.
Yes. Well, this is just a word to the wise. I know many of you just avoid it entirely and could be a very good idea. I know I find it out. Get an email and AI answers the email for me. I go, good grief. How did this happen? Anyway.
Didn't even need to get out of bed. It just took care of all of it.
I wanted to add that Mrs. Eddy says it's reason and revelation that's going to unfold Christian Science, and AI can only give you reason. So we're like, you can only get halfway of her answers, if anything.
But AI can also be unreasonable. So
that's true. Yeah. And I think anything that's artificial is going to only focus on the written word. Where's the spirit? Especially, it tends to take the words out of context and then claim them as authority. The only authority is the great spirit of goodness, who is God. And Mrs. Eddy followed that spirit all the way and did, and we have the result of it, her example. So we should follow that example.
And the first artificial intelligence was just human intelligence. And that already didn't work for us. So we don't need more than that.
Yeah, it's like all word or all letter and no spirit.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
All of these things, but computer programs that are designed to gather data to be more, to help people be more efficient. There's nothing intelligent about it. In fact, we know intelligence is capitalized because it's God, but the A stands for artificial.
No.
But and to make AI an artificial God is exactly the opposite of what we should be doing. If it's a data gathering process.
Yeah.
And it can be useful in a lot of situations. To worship it or to think that it can actually do something, it is wrong. And that is what messes people up if they think that it will actually do more than it is capable of doing. Because it's nothing more than a computer that was written by a person to help gather data more efficiently.
All right. Thank you all. Jeremy, Jeremy, please read the golden text. We're going to move on now.
Isaiah, and thine ears shall hear a word behind thee, saying, this is the way, walk ye in it. And when ye turn to the right hand, and when ye turn to the left.
Now there is divine intelligence. There is God speaking. It's beautiful, isn't it? Wonderful. And this is what cherishing, developing, being aware of, always there, always speaking to you. Oh, gentle presence, peace and joy and power. So, Nancy, you read what you contributed this week.
Yes, I found a daily verse commentary. God's grace and mercy towards us is never changing, and he is always there to guide us back into the way of truth. All that he desires of us is that we listen to his voice, hearken to his word, trust in his love, and rely on his sufficient grace, and let the love of Christ guard our hearts so that every step we take may be directed by him for our eternal benefit and for his greater glory. Christ is the way, and Christ is our guide. Christ is the path, and he is our constant companion. He is the rock of our salvation, our defense, and our deliverer. But the enemy has set traps on the left and laid snares on the right for us with doctrinal falsities, and entices us away from the highway of holiness with tempting treats, deadly doubts, and ungodly desires. Let us listen to the word of the Lord and hearken to his voice behind us, leading us, guiding us, directing us, and telling us which is the way that we should go, so that we are not tempted to turn to the right hand nor to the left, but keep our eyes on Jesus and our ears ever open to his still small voice of love. The end.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And so, now be careful. It's so easy to get on your phone and be scrolling and taking in all of this, frankly, just too much information. And a lot of it you don't know whether it's true or not. Spend more time listening to the still small voice. Jesus went up to the mountain, what, for 40 days and 40 nights? Just to talk to God. Ask yourself, how much time during the day do you do that? Quietness, stillness. Florence was talking about when she had a healing of her eyes. What did you do?
I was just quiet. I was so, you know, with the background I had, my thoughts were going all kinds of places. I was seeing double, that was. And I was like, oh my goodness, you know, all kinds of thoughts coming to me, you know, because of what I knew, anatomy and physiology, so-called. But I just kept, I was just quiet. I stayed in my bed, just quiet, knowing that, no, this is not from God. This cannot be from God. I can see because God sees. And I kept, you know, just having my thought on God the whole time until it took maybe 3 days or so, more than that maybe. And then I started walking again, and I could see it was one. I was just so elated, because with the anatomy and physiology, I mean, I was going all kinds of places I didn't want to go. So again, you know, this quietness, the silence, and turning on the hearing ear, you know, God does speak, and he does remove the lies that mortal mind tries to mesmerize us with. Yeah.
Thank you. That is beautiful. And we can type that up as an article or testimony.
Okay.
So beautiful. So true.
Yeah.
In quietness and in confidence will be our strength.
Right.
So in this busy world, make time to have this quiet time. Amid the restless eyes of earth, how steadfast is thine eye, fixed on the silent loveliness that fills the morning sky. That's hymn 36. But I say that to myself first thing in the morning when I get up, when I arise, and I look out the window and see that silent loveliness in the sky, and I keep all that phone and everything off for a while till I'm fully grounded in the truth. It's not good to just turn on your phone or computer right away to see, oh, the news or who called you or who emailed you or whatever. Mm-hmm. Quiet in quietness and confidence shall be your strength. And you have a right to that. You have a right. The minute you turn on your computer, you have a world to heal, okay? Yeah. A world of all kinds of... So you make sure you are well grounded in the truth and knowing, to go back to the watching point, that God is all. There's nothing but him and his presence. And Mrs. Eddy says in Watches, Prayers, and Arguments, and also Things to Handle Daily, that you stay and you get into this right sense until you get it, if it takes 2 hours or longer. Many, many times, and I know people can wake up with a lot of anxiety and they went to bed with it as well. You can't go through your day just constantly with this anxiety. You've got to stop it. You've got to know that God is all and then go about your day. And often if you're like that, you're up at night. So to say you don't have time to do it because you have to go to work in the morning, well, if you're awake at night, you do it then. You do it whenever you can. You establish your oneness with the Father and you establish a sense of him being all, and you establish he's the one mind and you can't hear any other voices. I will hear no other voices. I will heed no other call. And then you go about your day. And then, as Karen said recently, you know, check every hour and make sure you're still with that sense.
I think it's right, too.
What better? Go ahead.
Now I remember, I think it was Mr. Evans or some said that during the day, people go to the bathroom. I mean, take a few minutes, even if it's 2 minutes, 3 minutes, you know, to make sure you're aware of that connection, that constant connection, that changeless connection with God. And that's helpful. It's very, very helpful.
Thank you. Yes, he was the one, and we used to do it at church when we worked here, but we would have timers every hour to make sure our thought was with God. And then, yes, if you were at a place of business and so busy, well, you can always take a bathroom break. They're not going to prevent that. And he encouraged, too, for lunch, just go out to your car. A lot of our people, they would say that. They'd go to their car. They had signs in hell through the lesson or things to read while they ate their sandwich. They would be studying and praying. There is a way to do it if it's a high priority. And then when you get days off or times off, how do you spend it? That's why Mrs. Eddy wrote that short little, I guess you'd call it an article, about traveling and to do more work, not less. And don't be glamored by whatever you're doing or wherever you are. But keep your connection. So many times on vacations, people can get really poofed up, as I will say, because they're not doing that. So, in quietness and in confidence shall be your strength. And then it adds, what does it say?
And you shall not.
And you would,
would not.
So please. Yes, you would, not a he would not.
excuse me, Bicknell Young, I'm sorry. Bicknell Young has an article on our website. It is very, very short, and it's called Quiet Realization. And he gives an account of a man, a practitioner, that says he takes time and calls it quiet time, just exactly what you're referencing. It's very short, and I think it'd be very helpful.
Oh, thank you. Put that on the carousel. Bicknell Young had a very deep understanding of the plan. Question about that. All his articles are really amazing, and to be listened to, read, studied, worked with, and they enhance. We already know, studying Signs and Health, the Bible, and prose works. First, there's all, he gets it from there, so it's all in there. But he explains it in a little different way. Thank you. In an article Carrie sent, I like the name too, it's called The Restraining Guide. It says, the master has left the assurance that the spiritual way is straight and narrow. And every disciple who starts to walk in it soon finds his assurance confirmed. It is only when we stop to consider some of the innumerable ways that diverge from the King's highway, or when we may be beguiled into heeding the suggestion of some guide who plans according to worldly ways and means, that there can or does come any complication or uncertainty. Then when a confusion of thought or an errant impulse may succeed in diverting the pilgrim for a moment, there will surely be given some warning token that will be to him the guiding word saying, this is the way, walk ye in it. If you get where you're just ignoring that, then you're in trouble. God, if you have any moral sense at all, God is guiding you. He's prompting you to do the right thing. You're just willfully not listening. Then it goes on, if the disciple is abiding close in the conscious presence of the guide, the consciousness of the spiritual idea that directs the way from sense to soul, the guiding and restraining word will come as a spiritual impulse, an intuition, as a spiritual sense that at once restrains and directs, and thought will be corrected and rightly directed before it has been manifested in some mistaken word or deed. Thus, to follow our guide will be to find the unerring direction of science. It will mean that every misleading thought or erring impulse will be discerned and destroyed before it has turned the truth seeker's feet from the way. But if the wrong word is spoken or the wrong deed is done, there will come the unerring rebuke. The warning voice will be heard. And the disciple's safety is in promptly heeding it. But then if you don't, you're going to have to learn the hard way. But remember, it's so comforting, you know, when you think that we have this guide with you all the time. You're not alone. I like the word guide. And he sends his angels by your side to comfort, guard, and guide. And then in another article called The Way, it says, it is hazardous for the pilgrim to walk alone. He may find that he has wandered off the spiritual path, highway, the king's highway, and needs to retrace his steps. But as long as he holds to the right course, he is safe. The angel guardians that patrol the highway are never off duty. And the lawless hordes of doubt, fear, or lack can make no inroad upon their province. If at any time our sense of direction becomes dim or our view of the goal obscure, familiar warning holds good. Stop, look, and listen. Stop wondering and worrying. Wait on God. Look away from the immediate problem and see God's allness, the vast perfection of spiritual creation, and then listen for the voice of truth. And thine ears shall hear a word behind thee saying, this is the way, walk ye in it. When you think of how many instances during the day we have this privilege and this guide, this angel with us constantly telling us, please make it your best and ever, friend, and listen. Stop, look, listen. And be so grateful for it. As you nurture it, it won't be a little voice anymore. It's like a shouting voice that you cannot go off. You better not go there. Do not go there. The big red flag. Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's true. I mean, you make it a way of life. This is how it's just a way of life. Father, what do you say? What do you think? You know, what do you say? Mostly is what I say. If no matter what it is, it might sound, oh, it's just a store. Well, which store, right? Because we don't know. But it's wonderful, I feel. After a while, it just becomes something you do. You know? Always checking in.
Yes, absolutely. It's just a way of life. In another article that Carrie sent that I found was very, very important, it's called To Whom Should We Look? And it talks about Peter. He administered a rebuke to the wonder-struck citizens of Jerusalem when, after healing the lame man at the gate of the temple, the populace looked on Peter and John as having themselves wrought a miracle. Peter said, ye men of Israel, why marvel ye at this? Or why look ye so earnestly on us, as though by our own power or holiness we had made this man to walk? Then he told his auditors that the God of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob had raised up his ideal in human consciousness, and through the faith taught by Christ Jesus, this Prince of Life, the lame man, had been healed. The apostles had learned to look away from personality to principle. Their abandonment of self-righteousness, self-will, and self-love enabled them to be instruments of God's healing power. Now, honest to peace, so often I've seen people, you know, just worshiping teachers or practitioners. This is very dangerous. No. And then if that teacher or practitioner is no longer here, they seem to fall to pieces. a good practitioner is going to make you stronger and better and able to do the work, as in the case of Elijah and Elisha, the mantle falling on Elisha. A practitioner, if that practitioner is gone and you fall apart, that tells me something about the practitioner, right? What's with that? You can't just be leaning on them. And I have explained in our church, you know, people, a lot of thank you for the practitioner help or daily help. Well, that's because we're doing the work for the world, not because it's a personal desire that I need help with this and I need help in my life to be better. This is world work we're doing. This is to make you stronger. And also, if someone comes to you looking for help, you help them. No more this, oh, call a practitioner. You are the practitioner. You do it. How will you ever grow if you don't? They're turning to you. They're looking to your light. Therefore, you have the ability to do it. Now, and this goes with another article. I can find that. Where the person says, you know, someone was asking her for help and she didn't feel she could do it. And the answer was, and it's in the lesson of the loaves and fishes, use the truth that you know, even if it seems a little. To correct the mortal picture of lack and demonstrate God's abundance for all, that's what Jesus did. The writer then gives examples of using her application of truth she knew in several situations. In the first, she was asked to heal someone who had suffered from a very bad eczema on her hands. She agreed to do the work, but then felt fearful in not knowing enough of the truth to bring about the healing. But applying Jesus' teaching about the loaves and fishes, she decided she wouldn't leave the woman suffering and send the multitude away hungry. So she started praying on her way home on the train. She thought, if God has given me this work to do, he also will supply the understanding. With this comforting thought, I looked up to heaven, lifted my thoughts to God, Jesus did in that story, and blessed and broke the truth that I had. Then a sense of peace came over me and the whole thing went out of my thought. The next day a letter arrived with the news that the hands were healed. I did indeed then gather up the crumbs that remained, for the joy and gratitude, confidence and encouragement with that which that letter brought me would have filled more than 12 baskets. The lesson is that when someone asks for help, we bless and break what truth that we have, and God will provide the blessing. I think it's fair to say, Lawrence and I, and Jeremy's getting there too, where we have plenty of work to do. If someone comes to you, you help them. You grow. You reach. These days are over. Everyone has to work in the practice and be strong and not fall apart because they have somebody, whoever that somebody is, that, you know, that they think has some vast power. God is the power. And there was another good article about Jesus walking on the water, and it said that, yes, Peter fell into the waves. You know, first he looked around and became afraid, but he also thought in a way that Jesus had some miraculous power. But the honest truth of that matter is that there were laws, God's laws working. That is the truth. There are laws in place. And when you know that, that impersonalizes. God is no respecter of person, right? All of you can do the healing work if you want to. And you rely on laws, not because you have some miraculous power. Is that not right?
Yes, it's correct.
Or yes. It's God.
It's God who does the healing, so therefore, yeah, it's available to everyone. So
it is, and you mustn't shirk responsibility. It's for you to grow. And then you will never feel lost. You know, and we have the books. We have everything we need. Great companions such as these. They're ever with us. They're on the battlefield with us now. All these early workers are with us here. Make them your best and ever friends. Make God your best and ever friend in Christ Jesus. It's most important. I feel it has stifled the movement by all this relying on person rather than God. And I thought that was such a good point that article made, and also the other article which said it was Jesus knowing the real law that he couldn't sink, didn't. It was a spiritual law. It was God's law. It wasn't a material law. So here we are, and I guess the time is up. And
the world needs you.
The world has needed you.
Your work.
Yes. So we will end today with another article sent by Carrie. Look Unto Me by Violet Kersemere.
She writes, "Look unto me and be ye saved, all the ends of the earth." This text indicates the certainty of universal salvation through undivided faith in God, omnipotent good. It is at once apparent that the demand, "Look unto me," does not refer to physical seeing, but solely to one's spiritual outlook. Elucidating the first commandment, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me," Mrs. Eddy writes in Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, page 467, quote, "This me is spirit," end quote. Therefore, it is to spirit that the sufferer must look for his health, the sinner for his redemption, the sorrower for his consolation. In contrast to this me of spirit, our leader thus defines the word you, page 599, as applied to corporeality, immortal, finity. The student of Christian Science learns that he cannot look from this me of spirit to the you of corporeality and seek to reconcile opposites. Nor can he expect spirit to heal insensate matter. Spirit does not rain down material health and material blessings, so-called, upon mortals. But the power of spirit lifts mortals to perceive and to prove that health and joy are wholly spiritual in their origin and nature. It may be said that the alert student of Christian Science is constantly saved from some form of discord, from becoming sick, irritable, fatigued, discouraged, resentful, from being unwise, uncharitable, selfish, or lazy. This is because he is yielding to spirit's insistent and incessant demands that one shall put off the false concept of man as rapidly as is practicable, and adopt and adhere to the true model, spiritual man. The contemplation of this wonderful me of spirit, God, brings about the gradual fading out of the belief in the you of corporeality. This exchange of the ephemeral beliefs of the flesh for the substantiality of spirit will continue to unfold until, as the Apostle Paul writes, "We all come unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ." One who would rejoice in God's gifts will discern and enjoy them in the measure of his surrender of material counterfeits. If he comes to Christian Science with one hand still grasping the material, he will receive but a measure of the blessing in store for the single-hearted. If, on the contrary, he strives to be teachable in all ways, eager to entrust his health, his happiness, and his heaven to the high and lofty one that inhabiteth eternity, then he will find that while we travail yet on earth, our hearts may be in heaven.
Thank you all so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.